The following is a 1500 ESPN Twin Cities production.
Raised on basketball. Raised in front of a computer screen. Raised for covering the game. Raised by Wolves. Now, talking all things Timberwolves with beat writer Derek James, here's Benny Hill with the Raised by Wolves podcast.
Yes, indeed. We are the Raised by Wolves podcast. We are brought to you by TCL, America's fastest growing TV brand and official TV of the Minnesota Timberwolves. We are here after the Wolves win over the Denver Nuggets to clinch their first playoff spot in 14 years. It was 2004, the last time the Wolves got in. And we are also on Facebook Live right now as we speak. So if you're on Facebook and you're looking at us, hi, this is what we look like. I'm Manny. He's Derek.
Hello.
Thanks for got to talk into the mic though a little bit to pick it up though.
That would help. I'm being rude, but we might have a guest.
Yeah, we might have a guest, and I don't think your mic is picking up at all right now.
No.
How's this?
That's better.
Way better.
Yeah, you might just have to switch around there.
Okay.
Live Facebook Live production stuff we're doing here.
But, this is just the beauty of live stuff.
But if you're watching, you can see us. You can see what we look like. This is what we do every week when we tape the podcast. We are here in the studio here at 1500 ESPN at Hubbard Broadcasting. But, wow, 112-106. Wolves win. They're in the playoffs. 47-35 is the final record. And we should just get right into the elephant in the room, which was whatever the hell that was. Offensively in the last three minutes of the game.
You don't want to start this off by
the last 3 minutes
negative.
Of regulation, I should say.
But, oh man, that fourth quarter was just so horrifically bad, and you just feel like they're lucky to have actually pulled that out. Because what did you say, 2 points at the last three, after the last three
minutes?
Yeah,
it was 99-91 Wolves. I think it was like, it might have been like 3 minutes left, and two and a half, maybe, if you're watching us right now and you know exactly how much time was left when the score was 99-91, feel free to let us know.
Wolves scored 15 points overall in the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
Oh, on 6-for-18 shooting. Well,
yeah,
the Nuggets shot 39%.
Bad. That's just bad. And it was exactly what we've been seeing all year late in games, is just isolation, hero ball. Jimmy Butler's got the ball, and the other four guys are just standing there, and maybe somebody comes up and sets a screen for him, you know, on the outside, and he just throws up a prayer shot that has very little chance of going in. And it was like that for like four or five straight possessions down the stretch. And you and I were both sitting there watching this, and we're like, what is this? What is this? Like, why does this continue to be the strategy late in games? It's been like this all year.
Yeah, I don't understand it either. I think I probably even said it when we were in the room watching the game, that it's about the 9 minute mark.
Yeah.
Jimmy Butler just started pounding the ball again. It's like, we're just going to get 9 straight minutes of this. And sure enough, we did, until that, whatever that Jamal Crawford shot was at the end of regulation.
And I have to say, okay, so Nathan comments, he says, can anyone tell me what that final play of regulation was? Timeout for that shot. I'll tell you, Nathan, what that play was. During the timeout, and Derek can attest to this. He can vouch for me.
This is
all fact. During that timeout, I was sitting there, and I did my Tibbs voice, and I said, all right, guys, we're going to take a 39-foot shot for Jimmy. Want a 39-foot shot for Jimmy? And sure enough, that's exactly what it was. The only difference was that it was Jamal Crawford and not Jimmy Butler. But otherwise, it was exactly what I predicted it would be.
He threw us for a loop.
Yeah. That's how Tibbs tricked us. It's not going to be Jimmy. It's going to be Jamal instead, but it's still going to be a terrible 30-foot shot that has no chance of going in. Yeah, that was, to answer your question, Nathan, I have no idea. I have no idea what that shot was. But, yeah, so a couple things we got to talk about. So the offensive execution at the end of regulation was atrocious on the Wolves' side. On the Nuggets' side, it was actually pretty good. But the other thing I think we got to talk about is Taj Gibson, because here's a guy who was...
This man is a warrior.
He is an absolute warrior, and he was battling a neck situation. It was like a neck strain or something that he suffered in the Memphis game on Monday. And there's these doubts about, you know, is he going to play, and how, if he is going to play, how effective is he going to be? How much can he actually play? And the defense that he played on Nikola Jokic late in regulation and in overtime, that strip right at the end of regulation where he got his hand in there, knocked the ball loose, and then was able to corral the ball and give the Wolves a chance for them to take that terrible Jamal Crawford shot before the end of regulation.
But he just got
that was the play of the game.
He got into Jokic's head that entire fourth quarter. I mean, Gibson is gassed. He's played a lot more than I think he expected to this season. He's banged up.
Yeah.
And he absolutely frustrates Nikola Jokic down the stretch. I mean, you really just couldn't ask for more from a role player and a guy just to do what he's here to do and just to fulfill that perfectly. He didn't let Jokic have anything easy. Everything was like that horrific turnaround shot that went behind the backboard onto the stanchion.
Yeah, and I mean, let's be honest. I mean, we can debate about, did Taj get too much money or, should they have even signed him when they could have gotten another shooter or something like that with that cap space.
Are we still having FOMO over Patrick Patterson?
Well, that's a whole nother deal. But, I mean, we can talk about that all we want, but the little things that we saw with Taj Gibson do in this game, throughout this game, that's exactly why you need a guy like that on your team. And is there a similar sort of playing style and position, between him and Gorgui Dieng? Yes. But Taj is a better player.
Oh, flat out.
He's a better player. And there's really there's no arguing. Like, you can't even argue that. You can't even argue the opposite of that. Like, He's a better player than Gorgui Dieng. Yes.
And, I mean, you hate to fall back on things like toughness, but Taj doesn't back down to anything. He doesn't go through anyone.
He knows how to play.
Yeah. And it's just made such a difference. And I think Taj really took advantage of his experience in those situations to a guy like Jokic, who really hasn't played that many minutes. He's been in the league for, few years now. But Jokic has not played a lot of minutes. And Taj has all this experience. And he gave everything that he had, came up with those couple key plays that really sealed the game. I think down the stretch, I mean, you look at that Teague floater, the Taj steal, and then the Wiggins rebound and free throws. I mean, those were really, some of the biggest moments. And it was good to see that it didn't just all have to come from, Karl Anthony Towns or Jimmy Butler like we've become so accustomed to with this team.
Grant says, obviously it was an unbelievable play by Taj to come up with that strip, but wasn't that crazy risky? Would have handed Jokic two or three game-winning layups if he was half an inch off. That's a fair point, but I think that's why Taj is Taj, because he knows guys like Taj know how to make that play and not commit a foul.
Yeah,
and that's what makes it a great play is that he was able to do that without fouling and putting Jokic on the line. I mean, it is a risky play. I mean, anytime you try to contest a shot or go for a steal or anything like that, it's a risky. You're running the risk of, committing a foul, but
or you're just at the mercy of the angle the referee has.
Right.
It's not necessarily. And when I coach kids basketball, I said the same thing. It's not necessarily what you do. It's what you look like you're doing. The perception is the reality, and if that's what they perceive to be happening, you're going to get called for that foul. And yeah, so there's absolutely a skill in avoiding the foul, especially in those tight situations. But I do like that. The refs did swallow their whistles a little bit there and let guys play. Yeah, there were some calls that, should have been blown, but they didn't. And, it did make for a nice back and forth.
Let's see. We got a question from Patrick. How does Wiggins not get a shot for over 8 minutes of game time?
I can't tell if this is... I can't tell the tone of this question, to be honest. I saw it too.
Well, here's the deal. Here's the final stat line for Andrew Wiggins. In this game, 18 points, 5 rebounds, 3 assists, no steals, no blocks, but whatever. 3 of 5 from 3-point range, 5 of 9 from the floor, 5 of 8 from the free throw line. I mean,
the two
18 points on 9 shots, it's.
You can't be upset about that.
It's efficient. It's efficient, so you can't really argue with that.
Does this team really need much more than that from him on a night like tonight when Towns and Jimmy are both on?
Probably not, but I think it would have helped. But the thing with Wiggins is This is the dilemma with him is that, okay, he's going to start making this money on this big contract starting next year. So he's getting played like a max player. The problem is when he's taking more shots, most of them are bad shots. It's the same, you know, and there were a couple of them tonight where it's a long contested 2-point shot. It's a fadeaway. It's a floater that's got no shot of going in. It's a 3-pointer in the wings. And you were sitting there when I said it. Andrew Wiggins took a 3 from the wing. And I said, Andrew Wiggins, for the rest of his career, should never take another 3-point shot from the wing. He can take all the corner threes he wants because he actually hit a couple from there tonight. Mm-hmm. And we've seen him knock down a few of
them
this year.
It's an easier shot, too.
It's the easiest 3-point shot because it's the closest 3-point shot on the floor is the corner three. So that's why they encourage everybody to take more corner threes because it is the easiest 3-point shot to take. But Andrew Wiggins is terrible at shooting threes anywhere else around the horn. So he should, for the rest of his career, just take nothing but corner threes. Even if he's in a gym by himself with nobody else on the floor to contest or anything, he should not be taking any more
three-pointers. So he just decided that he just can't get better.
Yes. No, I'm not. No.
Or at least we don't want to suffer through watching him get better.
Yeah. It's just, I you know, he is, I've been saying it for a couple of weeks now, especially since he's been really, really struggling, is that he is the most important priority this offseason in terms of getting him right. Like, he's regressed so much offensively this year. He's improved defensively. But you don't really notice it because there aren't a lot of like advanced metrics to really determine someone's improvement on defense.
Yeah, all defensive metrics are kind of not without their flaws. You just kind of pick the least flawed one.
Right. So it's hard to really like look at numbers and measure how he's improved defensively. But he has gotten better defensively.
Yeah.
Now, part of that is because he was so epically bad defensively before this year. But he has improved. So that's a good sign. But the problem is he's regressed on the other end of the floor.
At best, he's stagnated. And that's not any better. Not much better, at least.
But it's like you look at the free throw percentage. He's in the mid to high 70s every year in the first 3 years of his career. And then he's 63% this year.
Just inexplicably.
It's inexplicable. And so, look, you're paying him this money starting next year. He's going to get the money. Like, it's not the NFL. This is what I've been saying for weeks. It's not the NFL. You can't just say, Wiggins sucks now, and we can get out of this hole by just cutting him. Like, they do that in the NFL all the time, where if a guy's not who you think he was, you can find a way to just get out of the contract because the contracts are not fully guaranteed.
You pay him, what, a quarter of it or 10%, and you're done.
Yeah. So Andrew Wiggins is going to get all $148 million that he's guaranteed to get. So the Wolves have two options with him. You can move him. You can try to move him. And you're probably not, because of his struggles this year, his value is probably not very high.
No.
So you're probably not going to get a lot in return for him.
Unless there's one team that's just sitting there going, oh, I know if we had him, we could fix him.
Andrew Wiggins. You know, and maybe he is fixable. Like, I'm not
he's bailing
still
young.
On him.
He's still young.
I'm not, you know, closing the book on him completely, but the struggles he's had this year are very concerning. But the thing of it is you got two options. You can trade him and get 50 cents on the dollar, or you can try like hell to fix him. And to me, it's like, if you're going to ask me what I think the more likely scenario is, it's the latter, is that they're going to have to try like hell to fix him. You have to. You either have to trade him or you have to try like hell to get him to get him better, because you are paying him starting next year too much money for us to continue to have this type
but
of
doesn't
season.
Part of it, I mean, at this point, he's going to be going into what, year five?
Year five, yep.
Wow, that flew by. Oof, so year five, and we're still talking about, oh, they're going to have to.
Right.
Oh, Tibbs is going to have to reach. Jimmy can influence
it's,
or so and so.
Really, it's he's got to look in the mirror. He's got to start looking in the mirror, man.
Like, he says all the right things sometimes. What, like, I forget what game it was, but he says, oh, I just fall in love with my shot too much. And then he goes out and has another horrific shooting night where he takes a bunch of bad shots. Like, it doesn't change. And after a while, it just falls on deaf ears after a while because you don't believe it.
Nathan says, all it takes is one GM to love Wiggy. Vlade. Well, if there is one, I guess if there is one GM.
Hey, Vlade, I got a guy for you, and he's not Ben McLemore. Are you interested?
Yeah. But that's what it's going to have to. If you're going to move Andrew Wiggins, it's going to take somebody that's going to be like, yeah, I can fix him. I know he's struggling, but I can fix him. You know, because right now it's just he's got the contract and he has not played well this year overall. And then if you're going to try and trade Andrew Wiggins this offseason and you're another GM around the league, you're looking at that situation. You're saying Andrew Wiggins is 23. He's an athletic freak.
He averaged 22 points a game a year ago.
Yeah.
Why
do they want to get rid of him? Like, that's what you, if you're an opposing GM, that's what you're asking. Like, okay, why are they trying to ship him out of town so quickly a year after signing him to this big contract? So in that retrospect, like, if you got GMs thinking that way, they're not going to give up a lot for him.
Yeah.
They're not going to give up a lot for him. So it sucks. I mean, I get it. Like, the frustration is there and it's real and it's legit and the struggles are there.
I think just part of that too is, I mean, I was,
there's only really two things you can do to going forward with him.
Well, and I was texting you before, on my way over, that, you know, when Towns, who was drafted, you know, the year after him, you know, has a great game, and you see the way Jimmy Butler plays, or the way Taj Gibson just does so well playing within himself and doesn't try to do more than, you know, he knows he can do. And it just makes Wiggins just stand out even more in just all the wrong ways. And by the way, I do have our guests, so should we take a couple more? And
yeah, let's take a couple more. We'll talk about a couple more topics. We do have a special guest that we're going to get to. So we'll talk about a couple more topics here, and then we'll say goodbye to our Facebook Live viewers, and we appreciate all of you guys viewing and chiming in. So the bench. This is what I want to get to. Tibbs actually played more than eight guys tonight, which was interesting. He hasn't really done a whole lot of that this year, but Jamal Crawford. Whew. Okay. And there were moments in that game where I'm just thinking, why? And I love Jamal. Like, Jamal's been, like, one of my sort of favorite.
If he doesn't go into broadcast when he retires.
Oh, he's great. Like, he's well spoken, like, he understands the game. He's a great interview. He's awesome. Like, I love Jamal Crawford. Like, he's been one of my favorite, like, non superstar players to watch for over a decade. Like, even, you know, a decade and a half, let's say. But I just don't understand, you know, when he's not having a good shooting night, he doesn't really give you much of anything else.
No.
His defense, we knew.
He played some solid one-on-one on Jamal Murray down the stretch.
Yeah.
On one possession, though. So I don't know that one possession is a big enough sample.
I don't know if that
but
counts.
But it's in there, Manny. It's in there.
Yeah. Yeah, boy.
But I mean, just that elbow jumper that he pulled up and launched into three defenders was just horrific.
Yeah, and it's like, if he's making that shot, okay, but if he's not making that shot, you gotta.
And I get that, like, the gunning aspect is what makes Jamal Crawford Jamal Crawford, but, you know, he's a veteran guy. He knows, he can see that the team is struggling to get going and they just need a bucket. And we've seen him at times be able to facilitate, you know, good ball movement, good offense, and then you run and take that shot.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of risky.
So just a couple of other players on the bench tonight. Derrick Rose, a couple points, took two shots. He's a plus seven. I mean, they played okay when he was on the floor, I guess.
Our guy Tom has a good question for us, too, when we're ready.
Okay. Tyus, 10 minutes, 3 points. Gorgui Dieng. Gorgie is another guy that, I mean, to a lesser degree, but it's almost the same type of thing as Wiggins. You got to figure out what you're going to do with him this summer.
Six
man.
Minutes, 2 for 5 shooting, 3 rebounds, and 5 points.
You got to figure out something with him. I mean, you got to if you're going to pay him this kind of money, you got to find a way to get him to contribute more. I mean, he was your starting power forward last year for the entire season, and you signed him to this extension last year, which at the time it was signed, not too many people were complaining about it because he was a starter and he was your starting four and all that stuff.
He's playing well.
Yeah, and he was playing well. And I've long said that, okay, Gorgie's, I think, his best role on a good team is to be like the first base.
Yes.
And, I mean, he essentially has been this year, but he's not playing well. He just has not been playing well since February. He's not played well at all. And
I think he needs some minutes, but he does, like, the way he plays in limited minutes, you know, doesn't really
make anyone. It's hard to keep him out there.
Yeah.
It's hard to keep him out there. And you're thinking, okay, if he plays more, you think he might play better. But if you put him out there for 5 minutes and he's just not giving you anything and he's making a couple of mistakes and
launching long jumpers,
launching long twos that used to be money for him, but he just doesn't hit those shots with consistency.
That's all he takes
anymore.
Now. I've started saying this shot is just like, you know, having frozen pizza for dinner. Like, you want to, you might not know, like, oh, God, I go for a burger. I could go for, you know.
You want the steak and mashed potatoes.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you just have to settle for a frozen pizza. Well, that's what it feels like when Gorgie pulls up to launch that elbow jumper or, you know, take that corner three that never seems to go in.
Joseph says, Tibbs has 3 years left on his contract. Yes, he does. Does he make it 3 more years? Next year is probably a 500 record again. Well, I don't know what the record's going to be next year. It's going to depend on what happens this offseason and everything. And they've got a playoff series to get ready for right now. And hello to the Houston Rockets, by the way.
Barring any surprises, this should be a 500 team, though, I would think.
Yeah, I mean, it's the Tibbs' contract. I mean, people have wanted Tibbs to be fired, especially like after that Memphis loss a couple of weeks ago. People have been clamoring for Tibbs to get fired. I get it. I understand it. I understand the criticisms that are thrown his way. I think a good portion of them have been deserved. But 3 years left on the deal, 24, like, is Glenn Taylor going to cut Tom Thibodeau a $24 million check to go away? I just don't.
And then pay somebody else. And then
bring
in
another guy.
Layden.
Right. And you may have to bump Scott Layden's salary up. You know, if you decide to retain him too, which I imagine you would in that scenario.
Because you're
not going
to pay two
role.
Guys to run teams elsewhere.
Yeah, I mean, you just, it's just not going to. And Glenn, look, when has Glenn Taylor ever had a quick hook?
Never. He let Kurt Rambis twist in the wind. He let David Kahn's contract run out. He let Kevin McHale run the team into the ground for almost 15 years.
Randy Whitman got
1,000 second chances despite being a terrible NBA coach. Like, never had a quick hook.
Yeah, so I just don't think, I understand the sort of the frustration with Tibbs, and it's warranted, I think. But I think even if they would have lost this game and missed the playoffs, I just think the likelihood of Tibbs getting fired and getting dismissed is just, I thought it was really, really, really slim, regardless of what would have happened tonight. Now, there would have been a lot more egg on Tibbs' face if they would have lost this game tonight and missed the playoffs with all
especially
the moves that they did. But
he would be getting eviscerated on Twitter right now for that Crawford final shot in regulation if they lost in overtime.
Yeah, exactly. So the Wolves win 112-106 over the Denver Nuggets. They're in the playoffs, first time in 14 years.
They're playing the Rockets. I saw someone ask that question.
Yes. We've seen a couple people ask who they're playing. They will be playing the Houston Rockets. They are the 8th seed. The Wolves actually had an outside chance of being the 6th seed if San Antonio would have beaten New Orleans and if Oklahoma City would have lost to Memphis, which the latter was not going to happen.
Hey, Wolves, don't lose dumb games early in the season.
Yeah, yeah. So they would have had an outside shot at the 6th seed going into tonight, but the Spurs lost to the Pelicans, and the Thunder took care of Memphis. So the Wolves are the 8 seed. They're going to play the Houston Rockets. Houston had the best record in the NBA. The Wolves played them 4 times this year and never really, maybe save for one game here at Target Center a few weeks ago, never really had a shot in any of the games.
That was when the Rockets, though, they got up big in the first half when they almost scored 80, 90 points in the first half. And then they got kind of bored.
Yeah.
Kind of took their foot off the gas. But the playoffs, I mean, this Houston team has a lot to prove. I don't think they're going to run into that same situation where the Rockets get up big and then they get bored with the Wolves. I think they're just going to go out and take care of business. One thing I do like, though, is the symmetry. The first time the Wolves made the playoffs in 97, they played the Rockets and got swept.
Yep.
And now, returning to the playoffs, they're going to play the Rockets in the first round as the eighth seed and also probably get swept.
Right.
But the symmetry's there.
Yeah. The Rockets are just a bad... It's been established already. They're just a bad matchup for the Wolves.
Now,
it's
Luke
just...
Mbamute being out is interesting. I don't think that increases their chances of winning a series, but I do think it maybe opens the door for them to get a game, whereas maybe they wouldn't have.
Yeah, and I feel like they can find a way to win a game because it's, you know, when you get to the playoffs, you just you sort of kick things up a notch and you know, guys' bodies are tired and you get all those things, and you know, every once in a while you can get things to go your way a little bit, a few calls here and there, a few shots here and there, and maybe you can pull out a game at home. But this is going to be a really, really, really steep uphill battle for the Wolves to even win a game in this series, I think. So we'll see. All right, we're going to get to our guest here in just a moment. All right, Derek, you know this guy personally much better than I do, so I'm going to give you the honors of introducing him. We've been trying to get him on for quite a while.
Yeah, I guess so. I had a guest post on Hardwood Paroxysm, and I found out later they really do guest posts at Hardwood Paroxysm, but Matt Moore was kind enough to let me on, and this was probably, what, 6 years ago? Five, 6 years ago? And now Matt Moore is joining us with CBS Sports Now, Action Sports Network, and we've been trying to run him down for a while, and here he is.
Welcome, Matt.
Hey, guys. How are y'all?
We're good. We're breathing easy now after that game tonight. What were your takeaways from it? I mean, this was obviously a huge game for both teams. Winner goes to the playoffs. Me and Derek are still trying to sort of figure out what kind of offense the Wolves were running in the last, like, 3 minutes of regulation. I mean, and it's been like this all year with them.
It's kind of the last,
like,
10 minutes, actually.
Yeah, well, the entire fourth quarter, basically. But it's, I mean, it's been like this all year with them, and they've won some games this way, and they've lost some games this way to some bad teams, and it's just, it's maddening because it's like, you know that they're capable of so much more, and you're just kind of left scratching your head because it's like, why do they keep offensively down the stretch, keep sort of banging their head against the proverbial wall like this? It's maddening.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that Jeff Teague, Taj Gibson pick and roll should be your go-to, your initial option there. Not what I would have opted for. But at the same time, you know, I think that a lot of that is kind of how probably they believe in, like, what playoff basketball is, and there's something to be said for that in terms of playoff basketball is determined so much by possession, and it's tough grinding out, and sometimes stuff that's clunkier, at least it's controlled, and that winds up having an impact. So if I'm going to try and put lipstick on a pig, that's kind of the answer there. It's like, hey, you know, it's purposefully ugly, so maybe when things get uglied up in the playoffs, it won't be so bad.
Did Nikola Jokic look tired to you down the stretch? It looked like he was, I mean, he was terrific, obviously. He had a great game, but it looked like as we got later into the game, he looked like a guy that, because he's never really been a high minutes guy. He's never really been a guy that played a ton of minutes, and he just kind of looked like he was just kind of running out of gas a little bit there, and Taj did a nice job on him late in regulation, but it just kind of looked like he kind of ran out of gas, and you know, I think he played almost a career high in minutes tonight, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, there's two ways of looking at it. One is, like, Nikola Jokic left it all on the court.
Right.
The other way to look at it is Nikola Jokic probably should have had a little bit more to leave on the court. I think a lot of it comes down to his conditioning has never been great, and he was definitely gassed. He gave great effort, and Taj made him work, and that combined for it, and you saw it on kind of how wild they got. I think Denver also just hit an emotional wall with the, it was a frustrating game, I think, for Denver in that they missed wide open threes, they missed layups, they had so many opportunities there. They crawled all the way back, had a chance to win it in regulation, and Gibson gets the steal. I think that's tough for them, and I definitely think that Jokic was gas, and there's been a lot of talk about that in Denver, about what's next for Jokic and where he's going to have to go with his game and how he's going to have to improve. And I think it's pretty clear that going forward, conditioning is going to be part of it, defense is going to be part of it, and there's a lot of work for him to do because he's still growing as a really good young player.
Do you think that this Nuggets team, because going back to the Portland game the other night, they were, you know, they hit 37% of their shots and they were under 40% again tonight. Do you think they hit another kind of, or you know, that was kind of the first instance of them hitting that wall?
Yeah, I just think, I don't know how much of it, I think really, they've just been going so long. They had, you know, they had crazy wins versus the Bucks, and like, they've been doing this, they've been playing live or die for 3 weeks with every single game, having to win every single one, because not only were they behind, but every single team in the West kept winning, and that made it really difficult on them. And so I think that was part of it. I think also, I think a lot of it, just that situation on the road is so tough.
Mm-hmm.
That's just a really tough situation because it's effectively a game seven. Like, you're basically in a game seven environment in a one-off, having to deal with what was a tough whistle, I think, for both teams tonight, as it has been for most of the season this year in the NBA. And then you're not hitting shots, you're missing layups, all of these things kind of go into play. And so I think a lot of things led to the frustration, and that wound up also tiring them out.
Yeah, I don't think those Nuggets have ever gone into Target Center and experienced an atmosphere like that. I mean, because that's one of the things about Minnesota is, I mean, you go to the Vikings game and you get that every single week.
Yeah.
Every single home game. I mean, really, yeah, this definitely had that playoff atmosphere and environment. And I could see how that could really wear down a team when you've been playing, you know, with the mentality that, you know, every game matters down the stretch here. We need every game that we can.
Yeah, and I think, you know, credit to the Wolves also, they were super physical. They brought that physicality, and Towns forced the issue when he was given the ball. And Butler obviously did what he always does, which is stay aggressive, stay up it. And there's something to that, right? Like, even if you're missing shots, just staying aggressive. I actually think both teams did that. You know, I think Jokic was aggressive. I think Barton was aggressive. I think Jamal Murray was aggressive. And a lot of this just came down to the Wolves were able to hit a few more shots than the Nuggets. And in the end, that's what wound up separating. I mean, look, these two teams were tied after 48 minutes in a do-or-die winner goes to the playoffs, loser goes home game.
After 81 games.
After 82 games. I think it's real difficult to say that one team was definably better than the other, even though you can talk about Butler's injury and the Nuggets will counter with Millsaps, and you can talk about all the adversities the Wolves have gone through and the Nuggets have had the same. I think really these were two very evenly matched teams, and in the end, the Wolves happened to have that last game at home and got what they needed to finally break the streak and get back in the playoffs.
Now the Wolves are going to be up against it, obviously, with the Houston Rockets. We were just talking before we got you on that, like, the Rockets are just, they're better than so many other teams in the league, and they've just been a terrible matchup for the Wolves this year. So, I mean, the Wolves are going to be up against it in this series, but how does Tom Thibodeau get Karl Anthony Towns more shots in the fourth quarter with Jimmy Butler out there as well? Like, is this a thing where he's got to make more of a concerted effort to get them, to get Towns more shots, or is this just sort of how they play and they just have to sort of go with how they've been doing?
I think the message has to get through to Jeff Teague. I think Jeff Teague is where you go there, and you just say, Jeff, we have to get Towns the ball. Like, it's imperative that he gets the ball. I have faith that if Butler has it, he'll try and create with Towns, and if Towns is open, I think he'll trust him if he doesn't see an opening for the shots that he's comfortable making and taking. So I think the key there is to get the same kind of looks that you were creating with Gibson, only created with Towns and Teague, and hopefully Teague understands the importance of the situation. That's the playoffs, and you know, Teague has been in the playoffs. He's a veteran. He should understand that off the go, but I think that's going to be the message, is make sure that Teague understands where the ball has to go.
Does Tibbs, do you think, is that something that he is looking to do? Or, I mean, because Jimmy's his guy. Like, this is the guy he had in Chicago that he sort of groomed into being the player that he is. And so much of this offense that we see late in games is just Jimmy sort of, you know, dribbling the air out of the ball and throwing up a shot. And sometimes it goes in, sometimes it's just terrible, and you're just like, what is going on? So is this more of, does Tibbs like really need to look at Jeff Teague and say it's on you, or is Tibbs like in your mind not even really thinking that way? I guess I don't know, because it seems like,
does he realize that it's a problem?
I guess, yeah, that's a good way of putting it, I think.
Yeah, no, we're far enough into some to those coaching careers. No, he does not. Like, this is it's quite frankly shocking they were as good offensively as they were this year. Like, nothing about the Wolves' offense really makes sense.
No,
right.
Like, they're this high-powered, high-octane, super-efficient offense that doesn't take threes and relies on tough contested shots in mid-range in the post. Like, it shows you the exceptional talent they have. It's also a strong indicator of, like, wow, like, this team has defied a lot of expectations of what's gone on this year. Look, there are going to be situations in which Butler is taking tough shots in those scenarios, and he's made them before, and it's not a bad way to go down. Like, a lot of it, what happens is late in games, I talk to coaches about this, and I ask them, like, why don't you guys run more complicated sets? And the answer I keep getting was, you know, I don't know. I don't know the answer to that, which I was like, I do not know. Like, this is such an important, and we're not talking like new coaches or inexperienced guys. Like, these are guys that are borderline Hall of Fame coaches. One Hall of Fame coach, and he was like, I don't know. I'm not certain, to be honest with you. But one thing that they all said was, if you do slow it down and you do isolate and you do run these kind of controlled possessions, you ensure that you're going to get a shot. You're not going to get a turnover. You're not going to get a shot clock violation. It's controlled, and that the player has the decision to try and get to a move where he is going to generate a look. And sometimes in those situations, you will live with a missed shot by a quality player if it's contested, rather than going over and over in your head why you called the play that wound up with a turnover or a shot clock violation because it was covered too easily.
Yeah, it's just amazing looking at this team now that the regular season is over, that they won 47 games despite not really having a pretty looking offense and being in the bottom third of the league defensively all year long, and missing their star player or one of their star players for, you know, almost 20 games, like, and that they won 47 games, and I don't even know if that's like a credit to Tom Thibodeau or not, but it's very, very interesting that they found their way to make the playoffs despite all of these things that you can't really explain.
Yeah, it's improbable, but, you know, I think a lot of it goes to the credit of they built this playoff appearance in November and December.
Yeah.
They racked up quality wins versus every division opponent.
Yeah.
And they beat the teams that they needed to. So, and teams, honestly, that were coin flips, and that kind of insured them against when they started losing later to teams that they should beat. When they started picking up those losses, this kind of provided coverage for them to be able to get to this point. So they racked up stuff in November and December. Now you can look at that and go, yeah, but what happened afterwards? Like, they faded so badly down the stretch.
Yeah.
Well, the good news is everything starts over, and you can have played badly for the last 2 months, and now if you play great for the next 2 months, you give yourselves a shot. We'll see. This matchup versus Houston is, quite frankly, an epic disaster for them, but it's still a shot, and Houston's not invulnerable. And Minnesota's got talent, and no matter what, you're here. You made the postseason, mission accomplished.
Yeah, I think making the playoffs was just such a big boost for the Wolves. But when you look at this Rockets team, doesn't it make them a little more dangerous? Because they have to have this mentality right now that they know they haven't quite gotten over that hump, and they actually have something to prove despite being the number one seed.
I think it's more than that. It's Houston senses an opportunity. I've seen this in teams before. The 2011 Mavericks actually had this kind of sense of, we have something really special here. Like, there's something going on here. And it's something that you only get the sense of when you're in that locker room and you're a part of that team and you see how they interact and the confidence that they carry themselves with. it's not about believing in yourself, because everyone's always believing in themselves and trying to convince themselves. But the Wizards are constantly trying to convince everybody that they believe in themselves and their ability to actually.
I used to believe.
The Rockets genuinely know. They're like, we're good enough to do this. This is an opportunity for all of us to get a championship. And that creates, I think, a different edge in how you approach things. Again, it's not to say that they're invulnerable, but I do think that Houston's on a whole other level, not only in terms of the way that they play and the style that they play and how good they all are, but the connectedness that I think that they have as a team.
I want to ask you about Andrew Wiggins, because he has been, like...
probably the most polarizing player.
Yes, he's been the most polarizing player, certainly here, and, you know, I kind of get your perspective from a national viewpoint, but, I mean, locally here, you've got one side of people that are like, well, he's 22, or he's 23 now, but... he's 22, 23 years old. He's got a lot of time to get better, and he just got to give him more time. And then you got the other side that's like, look, he takes inefficient shots. He's, you know, he's not fully engaged all the time.
4 years in.
Yeah, he's 4 years in. And then now he's got this $148 million contract. So, like, from my perspective, and then I'll get your thoughts, is, look, the contract has been signed. He's going to get the money. So the Wolves can basically do one of two things. They can trade him this offseason, which I don't think is very likely, but they could trade him, not get a whole lot in return for him because he's not, statistically, he's not having a great season. So teams are not going to want to give up a lot for him and then take on that contract. Or because he's making this money, you're going to try like hell to fix him. And that, to me, seems like the more likely option for them, and but they just got to do it. I mean, he's regressed so much offensively this year that when you're looking at him making this much money, you got to figure out something with him this offseason.
I think a lot of it is going to have to involve Wiggins himself,
yeah,
gaining perspective on his career, and realizing, like, look, you showcase this set of moves that you've worked on with Drew Hanlon and you've developed this scoring reputation, and you were this number one pick. All of this is here. Like, you got the money. You got it. Like, you're at that level. And no matter what, no one can take that money. That money's guaranteed. It's going, yep, in your bank account no matter what goes on. So now you can work on your game, and you can be somebody that helps your team win. And everybody wants a guy that helps his team win way more than a dude that scores 40 points. And that's the key for him is, like, look, tonight he made a great cross-court pass to get an open look. That was awesome. He played better defense tonight. Like,
that pass to Teague for three?
Yes. Like, the things that he can do to help his team are not the things that he defines his game as, and those are the things that are going to have to change, and I don't know if the Wolves can shape that with him. Like, they're not going to be able to move him. Like, nobody's right. Going to be like, yeah, sign me up for $144 million for an inefficient guy who doesn't defend and doesn't play make.
Right.
This sounds awesome. Where can I sign up? Do you want a first-round pick with that? Like, no one's doing that. But the good news is that because you, like, look, because the decision's made, it does afford you this chance, which is, like, look, he's here, but he doesn't have to be here in 3 years. It's just going to take it coming from him. He's going to have that realization of, this is what I've got to do. I've got to be different. I can't, like, I'm not Jimmy Butler. Not yet, not now. Grow into a different role. But if he embraces that, he's got the physical tools. He just needs to work on his game awareness. And if he gets there, then he can still be great. But a lot of that I don't think is on the Wolves. I think it's on him, and it's just going to be there. They have little choice but to give him the time and opportunity to make those decisions and to experience that growth.
Yeah, that's the frustrating thing with him for me, is that you can see smart games like tonight, and then he'll have other nights where he plays well, he's efficient, and then he'll say, yeah, I just leveled my shot too much, but now, you know, I realize I got to keep tacking and be aggressive, and then he'll go out and, you know, be 4-4, 17 on long twos, and it just doesn't make any sense. Or he can grab 6 rebounds one night and then get shut out the next, and it's just so uneven and inconsistent that. And, you know, like, development isn't linear. I mean, there are going to be ups and downs, but it's just so unpredictable and inconsistent with him.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I think part of it is that I always think about Kawhi Leonard, right, and how the Spurs kind of broke him down and was like, look, all we want you to do is work on the corner three. You're going to defend, and you're going to hit the corner three. And then he worked on that, and he got good at that. And they said, okay, well, we want to work on you being able to then pump fake and drive to the rim once they close out on you. Okay, all right, well, let's work on a little bit of pick and roll. Okay, well, let's put you in the post a little bit. And they built up from there. And with Wiggins, mm-hmm. it was more like when he got in, it was like, hey, the buffet is yours. Whatever you think is best. 19-year-old whose decision-making is questionable, whatever you'd like. And so, you know, they can't really get back to zero now because part of the money is that comes with status, and that's always going to be a thing. But what I think that they can do is the playoffs are going to be essential for him because it shows him the bar. Like, that team, Jerry knows, Taj knows, Teague knows. The rest of those kids are about to learn, like, oh, like how different it is. They're going to know what it's like when Chris Paul forces a switch on you and goes at you, not at 80%, not at 85%, not at 90%, when he goes at you at 100% and is bodying you and the refs aren't calling anything and everybody's attacking you and everybody's trying every single second. This is going to let him know what the bar has to be for his game, that trying to make it look easy isn't going to be good enough because nothing is easy in the playoffs. So that's the best thing about this, is the postseason will teach both him and Towns how good they have to be great. And that's something you can only get in the playoffs.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's, you said it perfectly. And I mean, it's vital, right? Like they need, I mean, he's like you said, he's going to get the money. So this has to happen. Otherwise he's just going to be another guy that's getting overpaid and they're going to kind of be stuck in the mud with him. So it's just at this point, like I've been telling people, like it's not the NFL. Like you can't just say, well, this guy's not living up to our expectations and you know, he's making a lot of money, so, but it's not all guaranteed, so we'll just cut him and start over and go get somebody else. Like, he's going to get his money. You can't just release him, you know?
The tough part, actually, I think, is going to be later down the line when Cat gets his money. And
yeah,
as you get better and you get and Butler gets his money and you get closer and you're like, we're good. Like, you know, we've made the playoffs 3 years in a row, but we're really shorthanded and we just don't have enough and we need something else. And that's going to be the question, is if Wiggins doesn't fill in a lot of those gaps, it becomes problematic. That's one of the issues, I think, with specifically, like, they had to do the Butler trade. It's worked out great. They made the playoffs. Like, this, it's a home run. Everything is great.
Yeah.
However, like, because of their redundancies, it becomes difficult because, like, Jimmy's versatile, but he's just not hyper versatile. And what they really need is somebody in Wiggins' spot who's super versatile, who's, like, knockdown 3-point shooter, great passer, great defender. Like, you know, not, this is a pretty high bar considering how good he is in the league, but like if you have like a B-level Klay Thompson, think about how good the Wolves are,
yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Like you've got a perimeter weapon who's able to do all these different things and is more aware defensively. That to me is a big key. Is like if he can, one thing I noticed whenever I did Wolves like film work this year is I just noticed how bad the defensive chemistry with him and Towns has been, and it should be something that's fixable. It should be like Towns and he should know, I need to shade him baseline because I know that's where Cat wants him to go. Or I need to push him middle, or, you know, Towns should be able to know, oh, Andrew's going to force him middle, I've got to get over there. And instead they were always like going the other way. Like Wiggins would give up the baseline when Towns is shading middle, and so the guy's got an open lane to the rim. And figuring out those little things should come with time, but again, I think it takes awareness of, you know, a lot of it really will depend on how great do you want to be. Like, I have zero questions that Karl Anthony Towns wants to be great.
Yeah.
None. I have zero questions about that. Jimmy Butler is great, wants to be greater, wants to be the best. Wiggins, I don't know about. Like, I just don't know. I don't know how good Wiggins wants to be, because in the NBA, there is a very distinct line between guys who want to be great and guys who want to be great the way they want to be great. And that dividing line is often the difference between really good players that are frustrating and awesome legendary players.
I just think like part of the problem with Wiggins, or what is problematic about Wiggins, is that he'll play the Cavs or the Warriors and he'll talk about how that's a motivation game, or how we still have conversations, you know, whether it's been, oh, being around Kevin Garnett will be great for him, we're still going to see how he works, and then, oh, being around Jimmy Butler will be great for him, and then nothing changes, and now we're going into year five with the exact same conversations.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, look, But here's the thing, is one good year and it changes.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, like if he comes out next year And even then, I will say this, like, it doesn't have to be the way that I've described it. Like, what if he just comes out next year and it's just, oh, we've got two really super efficient, you know, tough shot makers to go along with Towns. And the offense isn't beautiful and it's not this amazing, you know, wonderful game. But, look, Denver's offense, when it's popping, is absolutely beautiful. Guess what? They're going home. So, you can win in all sorts of ways. If Wiggins just has a year where his shot comes together and that's the difference, then that can help. Is it going to be worth the money he's being paid? I don't know about that. I think versatility is more important than ever in the NBA, and floor spacing is really important. I think it's hard to do what they've done consistently. It's more likely that they regress offensively next year than keep it up. But it doesn't mean that he can't have an absolutely terrific year and validate a lot of what they need to do. So there's all these options that are still on the table for scenarios of how it could work out. And you don't get those options if he's not on the team, right? Like, if you just bail on him, you're just like, okay, we're just going to go with role players and hope it comes together. And that may honestly be riskier than putting your money in a young guy who's got the physical tools and skill level to be great if he can find ways to put it all together.
Yeah, and it feels like, too, with the Wolves, when you look at the roster as a whole, they've got a nice team. They've got a talented team. But, you know, and this kind of goes into the question of Tibbs and, you know, how he uses his bench and everything. But it just feels like if they could get one more guy, and it doesn't have to be a star player. It doesn't have to be another, you know, guy to sort of make it this like a big four type of roster or anything. But if they could just get another, I mean, you talked about versatility. If they could just get a versatile bench guy who Tibbs will play 20 to 25 minutes a night consistently, 20 to 25 minutes a night, and can contribute for you. And I don't know if that's, you know, a three-point shooter, a defender, or whatever, but it just seems like that they need a little bit more. You know, I mean, they need Towns and Wiggins to get better, obviously, but they also, it just seems like they need another piece.
You mean not Derrick Rose?
Yeah, not Derrick Rose. Yeah.
Well, I think a lot of it also is you have to look at the long-term future, right?
Like, yeah.
Taj is awesome for right now. Like, he's been terrific for them this year, and he's always going to be Taj Gibson. And that's great. But, like, Taj is not long for the NBA. And eventually, if you find a guy who's a utility player who defends like Taj but spaces the floor a little bit better,
yeah,
like, that's perfect. That helps a lot. And there are all these options. That's the big key is, you know, everybody else that has role players, they're trying to figure out how to get Karl Anthony Towns and Jimmy Butler. The Wolves have Karl Anthony Towns and Jimmy Butler. All they got to do is figure out how to get the other guys, and they will. And I think that they give them multiple. This is the best part about it, is you get multiple opportunities. You made the playoffs in the first year of Jimmy Butler being in Minnesota.
Yeah.
Like, you, this is a success. And so going forward, you can figure out the rest of it as it goes, because you have this kind of starting block of, we know that this works, this has worked, this is going to work. And now, it's, you know, there will be players that will say, this is my opportunity to get on with a good team and, you know, and remake my image, and that's going to be helpful. I mean, think about P.J. Tucker, who's, you know, played in all sorts of places where he was on bottom feeder teams, and now he's on the best team in the league and plays a key role. Those kind of opportunities will be there, and guys will take risks on being a part of what they're doing in Minnesota.
Yeah, that's kind of what it feels like. It feels like, okay, you got Butler, you made the trade for Butler, it's been great, but now over these next couple of years, you just want to keep making the playoffs, keep your young guys, it'll allow them to get better, fill in some pieces along the way, and then as, you know, hopefully Golden State and Houston's window and, you know, Cleveland and some of these other teams, you know, I don't know about Boston going anywhere anytime soon, but as some of these other elite teams in the league, as their window starts to close, this is your opportunity to, in the next couple of years, sort of build yourself in a way to be prepared to pounce on those teams when they're especially vulnerable and get yourself in a position to win a championship.
The only downside to this, if Tom Thibodeau wasn't so reluctant to play young players,
right,
or, you know, take chances like that, but also we've already heard that it's hard to recruit guys.
You can't mess up, like, yeah.
If they didn't know that, they won't play. I mean, Nemanja Bjelica, you know, would probably like to go somewhere else, you know, just to play more. And I don't know if it's Jamal Crawford, it was one of the Wolves bench players who was unhappy about his minutes. So, I mean, it's going to be harder to get, you know, quality bench players if they don't think they're going to play. And so that's the one. either they're going to have to figure something out there, or Tom Thibodeau's going to have to change his mentality. But if Dwayne Casey can do it after 13 years of coaching, maybe Tibbs can too.
Yeah, I think he absolutely can. And, you know, even if you just, if your starters are reliable, and look, it's not like all of the contenders. I mean, look, the Golden State Warriors, quite honestly, have a really bad bench this year. If we're going to talk about benches, like, Golden State is really rough. So there's like a model for this to work out fine. And it's not ideal, but I do think that they'll still have an opportunity. The other thing is, as much as they'll be like, players will go into situations in free agency, especially when you look at the idea of like, yeah, but are they going to play? Players are always going to think they're going to play because they think, well, he didn't play because he's not as good as me. So they will always believe, well, I'm going to play because Tibbs will see how great I am and I'm good enough. But that's just how they think. And so that may help things a little bit there too.
And maybe with Cat, as Cat continues to sort of ascend into superstardom, that he can sort of be a guy that people look at and they want to play with. You know,
I think he absolutely will. You know, yeah. I think part of it is just going to being on the All-Star teams is just big because you're around those guys and they get to know you, and being in the playoffs and battling and having guys see how good you are, that helps too. Like, all of these things will help considerably.
Yeah, and they got to start. The Wolves have got to start hitting on some of these, like, because as they're getting good now, I mean, so the draft picks that they're going to have over the next couple of years, I mean, their draft pick is going to Atlanta this year with them making the playoffs, but for the next couple of years, with their draft picks probably being in the 20s or the high teens, I mean, you typically don't always find a superstar with those picks, but if you can.
Do they need to even be looking for superstars, though? I mean, probably not.
No, but what I'm saying is, like, it doesn't hurt to hit on those picks in some kind of way.
Yeah,
to get something out of them. Yeah, like Justin Patton, the fact that they were able to trade for Jimmy Butler and get the 16th pick in the draft to come over here with him. So now it's like, okay, you got that. Now Justin Patton was the 16th pick in the draft. Now Justin Patton eventually needs to be a contributor. Like, he can't. I tweeted this out a couple weeks ago, Matt. The Wolves can't have any more Lazar Haywards. Like, you can't. Yeah. You can't have a draft pick in the 20s and just have him just be
Lauren
terrible.
Woods.
Yeah, Lauren Woods, or you know, just you know, if you can, it can only help you if you can hit on some of these later draft picks. Because you don't need to be in the lottery anymore at this point. If you're the Wolves, you don't need to be in the lottery anymore. But if you can hit on some of these later picks, it can only help you.
It can, but I would say also, like, part of what winds up happening now, actually, is you run into problems where you're too good to be relying on young players. Like, those guys can't get rotation spots. Is your roster's full up, and you'll get to that point where, because a lot of it, I think, is I think there are good role players on the Wolves. I think the bigger problem is that Tibbs doesn't trust them,
yes.
And that's an issue, you know. And if he can get past that, that'll be way more helpful than them actually, you know, getting better depth. I think the depth is fine for what they've got. Like, Crawford still does what he does. Like, your bench is always going to be flawed. Your bench is never going to be perfect unless you're apparently Toronto. I think in general, you know, you just want a bench unit that can win you a few games, that can help you out, that doesn't bleed constantly. And if you can get that, then you're pretty good. And that's more likely to come when you have veterans than it does if you're relying on rookies. So it'll be complicated. Like, they need to hit on some guys because of the money constraints, but it'll also wind up getting some dudes that are, you know, if they get good enough, like, they'll have guys that are, you know, ring chasing, and they'll start to buy in. If they get one good run, like, it looked like it was going to be this year, and it didn't work out that way, but if they get one good run, then guys will start to buy in and be like, you know what, I'll take a pay cut to go play with Towns and Jimmy because I know how good they are. And so, again, that's why this year is important, is you're not having to wait a year to start that process. You're already on your way.
Matt Moore has been joining us here on the Raised by Wolves podcast. So what are you going to be up to as the playoffs begin here?
I'm sticking around for the first round. There's too many games I got to keep track of, and it's just really hard to do when you're on the road. I think second round I'm going – either to check out what happens with Sixers or with Raptors Cavs to see how that shakes out, if the Raptors can finally dethrone the King, or we'll see what that 4-5 matchup looks like depending on how this Wolves or this Jazz Blazers game shakes out. I'm definitely going to be checking out the Western Conference Finals though. because that one should be absolutely raucous.
Appreciate the time. Maybe we'll get you on later on as we progress through the playoffs, and have fun. I mean, this is I try to tell Wolves fans that listen to us that just try to enjoy this. Like it's
perfect,
been frustrating.
But...
the journey to get to this point has been frustrating and annoying at times, but it's the first playoff appearance in 14 years. Like you have to some degree, at least try to enjoy it. You know.
You got there. That's the thing. Who cares how it happened? If I told you going into the season, the Wolves make the playoffs for the first time since 2004, everybody would be like, awesome, that's great. Like, don't let how expectations shifted throughout the course of the season ruin the enjoyment, because there are a whole bunch of teams that really wish that they were the ones in the Wolves' position of struggling and finally getting into the playoffs.
And we have seen many darker days in the history of this franchise, so there's like no reason to be complaining too much right now.
There's no manna from heaven, so
right.
Things are good.
Exactly, Matt. Thank you, sir. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Matt.
Matt Moore joining us here on the Raised by Wolves podcast. That was a good talk. I'm not surprised at all by how good that talk was, because Matt knows his stuff, and he's a great follow on Twitter. As well,
I got to hear it like 8:15, 8:30.
Yeah,
and I basically saw him tweet, and I was like, "Hey, what are you doing after the game tonight?" Nothing. Great, you want to come on? And that's how this happened. And that's also why I was on my phone during the Facebook Live interview. My girlfriend called me out for that, but I actually had a good reason for it.
Yeah, my girlfriend was actually texting me because we're flying out to Miami tomorrow because we're going on this cruise for a week. So, the Wolves are in the playoffs, and I don't know how much of it I'm actually going to be able to watch, because I'm going to be on a boat in the Atlantic Ocean near the Bahamas. A little humble brag there.
Not very humble.
But, I mean, listen, they made the playoffs. It made you want to pull your hair out sometimes. I think tonight's game was kind of a microcosm of this season it's very frustrating.
No, good start. Almost kick it away.
Yep.
Keep it close to the end. I mean, yeah, it really was a microcosm.
Winning. Yeah, yeah. Total microcosm of the season. But the Wolves, they beat the Nuggets. They're in the playoffs. First time since 2004. Man, I was 20 years old the last time the Wolves made the playoffs. I'll be 34 in a week. Yeah, so it's fun. Let's try to enjoy it. It's probably going to be a rough matchup with the Rockets, but... you know what? We got to try and enjoy this. So we'll see how it goes. You can find the Raised by Wolves podcast on iTunes. Just search Raised by Wolves. Give us a friendly rating. You can find us at podcast1.com and 1500ESPN.com as well. We were brought to you by TCL, America's fastest growing TV brand and official TV of the Minnesota Timberwolves. Thanks to our Facebook Live viewers who viewed the first half of the podcast this week. Thanks to Matt Moore for joining us, and thanks to you, of course, for listening. For Derek James, I'm Manny Hill. The Wolves are in the playoffs. Let's enjoy it. We'll talk to you next time.